about certain aspects of M-theory solutions that have less than maximal supersymmetry that could in turn provide viable dual description of field theories that also have less supersymmetry. And in particular, the examples I'm going to focus on would be examples that could correspond to dual field theories in three, but also four and two dimensions, and having the minimal supersymmetry and equal one supersymmetry. Now, this work has been initiated late last fall in the paper with Hong Lu and Chris Cook, and then involved into a bigger program, also together with Gary Gibbons, where we address also certain more mathematical aspects of constructing such solutions that culminated in a recent paper that led also to new special holonomy spaces on which such configurations can live, and also some novel physics that comes out of them. So the outline of my talk is separated in different parts. At the beginning, I tried to motivate this the technique that we used to find such gravity solutions. Namely, we'll focus on regular gravity brain solutions whose transfer space times are into flat spaces, and a mechanism that would render such configurations regular as gravity solutions and thus viable duals to field theory will have its origin in the in 21 additional fluxes, which through transcendence or transgression terms modify the original curves of motion. So this approach I'm going to illustrate first on a prototype, simplest non-trivial example of the resolved regular self-dual string solution, and then I'm going to focus on the later parts by briefly summarizing the non-result of the three brains, and then focus on examples of M2 and the two brain configurations. Along the line that is going to lead me to some novel mathematical developments, in particular this explicit gravity solutions rely heavily on being able to construct explicit harmonic forms on Ricci flat spaces with special holonomy. I'm going to be more specific for a prototype example of the so-called Stenzel matrix, but briefly also mention speed 7 in G2. Examples where such explicit forms have been constructed. And then in the later part, I'm going to also describe not only novel construction of forms, but also example of a novel Ricci flat space time with spin 7 holonomy. Well, this mathematical aspect will of course have physics implications for such solutions. In particular, what we'll see is that one gets explicit novel, completely regular M2 brain configurations and B2 brain configurations. And when we turn to this new special spin 7 holonomy spaces, we'll also find new type of M2 brains that are connected to resolve B2 brains in an intriguing way. And last but not least, I'll try to give you a hint about some most recent work, where one is turning on fluxes in M-theory and putting compactive M-theory now in deformed G2 holonomy spaces, thus getting examples of what we term M3 brain configurations that have aspects of not supersymmetry but pseudo supersymmetry. And at the end, I'm going to summarize briefly the results and point out to new directions to be studied. So, ABS-CFD field correspondents provides us with new tools to gain insight on strongly coupled conformal ditch theories by learning more about, we learn more about the field theories by constructing the dual gravitational aspects of gravitational configurations. In particular, the prototype examples that we all start with is the example in four dimensions. When we start with the three-grain configurations of type 2B supergravity, whose metric ansatz has transverse spacetime completely flat, there is the three-grain flux turned on, with that particular ansatz, and the solutions of equations of motion are all expressed in terms of this harmonic function, function h, which satisfies the condition that the Laplacian in the transfer space time on h is equal to zero. In the decoupling limit, the harmonic function retains only one term that leads to the gravitational configuration, whose geometry is that of five-dimensional anti-de-Sitter spacetime across a five-sphere, and the string theory on such gravitational spacetime should give us information on Sapir-Whorf theory with n equal 4 supersymmetry in four dimensions, where ABS-CFT correspondence provides a dictionary between two sides. In particular, learning when we are dealing really with strongly coupled ditch theory, if the gravity is well behaved on this side, the classical aspects of gravity can give us non-trivial informations. In this particular case, when we are dealing really with strongly coupled to field theory. Well, in this program, our ultimate goal is we need to elucidate strongly coupled ditch theories with no supersymmetry like QCD. But for the time being, let us confine ourselves really on examples that are still supersymmetric, but they have less than maximal supersymmetry. In particular, as I said, my focus will be on examples on the gravity side that provide field theory candidates for field theories in 2, 3, and 4 dimensions, and minimal supersymmetry. So, an obvious way to reduce the supersymmetry of this original D3-brain configuration is to replace the transverse spacetime, which is originally flat, with the Ricci flat spacetime that has fewer Turing spinners, and that's the solution we have, pure supersymmetries. Now, replacing the transfer spacetime with a Ricci flat space with fewer Turing spinners formally does not change equations of motion for the system. We are still dealing with the Laplacian in the transfer six-dimensional spacetime on this function h to be zero. But now the Laplacian is varied in the transfer spacetime that is not flat, completely flat, it's Ricci flat, but it's not Riemann flat. Nevertheless, what one tries to do that generically on smooth Ricci flat spaces, one actually gets positive planes, namely one in principle can find out solutions that have reduced supersymmetry and in some cases also broken conformal invariants. But the real drawback in this context is that for Ricci flat spaces with fewer Turing spinners, the solution for this harmonic function is in general singular. So the gravity solution is singular, and thus we have to resort to string aspects on such spaces, which are much harder to handle, and thus those examples are usually harder to deal with since classical gravity is not curvatures blow up, so the classical gravity analysis does not apply anymore. Now, what left Rodanov and Strasser to resolve this problem is to introduce additional fluxes on such smooth space, and additional fluxes in general change equations of motion through Chairman Simon's transgression terms. In particular, the equation of motion for the field strength is not modified due to additional three forum field strength fluxes. But this modification could in turn, in principle, provide a way of resolving the singular gravity solution and get completely regular solution. The additional flux in particular is supported by harmonic three forms on the six-dimensional Nici flat space. And depending on the properties of these harmonic three forms, we have a chance of getting completely regular solution, and thus can trust our gravity description for the whole regime. So that was the principle that led Fedenhoven-Strassel to construct such three forms in the case of this deformed conical case. Actually, this idea can be put in a more general perspective. This principle that gives us resolve regular solution we named as resolution by transgression. Namely, in a general context, in gravity theories, we are dealing with Trans-Simons modifications of transgression terms that modify Bianchi identity equations of motion which are not additional fluxes. So in principle, if we are dealing with a gravity theory where we have p-brain configuration that has n plus 1 transverse dimension, okay, supported by the n forum field strength flux, and these Trans-Simons terms allow for us to add additional fluxes, P and Q, where P and Q is equal to the number of transverse dimensions, okay, which through this transgression term modify equation of motion in that way. If these additional fluxes are in turn supported by harmonic P forms on Ricci flat spaces, namely in a structure like that, depending what the properties of these harmonic forms are, in particular, if we have completely irregular, L-squared normalizable harmonic forms, this additional flux is supported by those forms will modify curves of motion in such a way that we end up with a regular gravity solution. So instead of turning to the concrete case of the three-grain, the example of Fedenhoven-Strassel, let me sort of more concretely describe now the case that is somewhat simple, for the case of the south dual stream. Any questions? Okay. So this I would consider a prototype example. And one is dealing now in this particular case with a supergravity solution in six dimensions, where the Bosonic Lagrangian has just the gravity as our dual three-form field strength, which allows for us to find a sub-dual stream gravity solution, namely the ansatz for the stream has four transverse flat spatial dimensions. The three-form field strength as well as metric are determined in terms of the harmonic function that satisfies the Laplacian, the transverse space-time equals zero. The solution gives us the harmonic function that in the decoupling limit leads us to the example of AVS 3 space-time cross a 3 sphere. Now this is the example with the maximum possible supersymmetry of this complex. And now let's go on and try to change the number of supersymmetry by replacing the four-dimensional transfer space-time with the Ibucci-Hansen metric, which has this particular form. It's a conical space that at small distances is regular, namely as we go to small distances, the geometry is locally R2 across two sphere describing the both resolution. And in general, as we said, those are resolved conical spaces, and in this case, it's a cone over S3 over Z2. So this is the explicit four-dimensional Ricci flat metric. Okay. We can construct in principle also field binding. And turn back to our subdual stream ansatz, solve the equations of motion. Okay. If we do that, just with the three form of field strength ansatz, but now the harmonic function satisfies the Laplacian in the transfer space that of the Richard-Hansen method. Writing that explicitly gives us the harmonic function that, unless we choose it to be trivial by choosing coefficient to be zero, turns out to be singular as we approach the end of the space-time.
So is this a ring of sorts that it's
It's ring, it's everything. R equals A is the end of the space-time. This is the coordinate, because R is the cone coordinate.
So R equals A is the tip?
It's the tip. It's the resolved tip, which if you write it in this limit, you would see that geometry is flat, two-dimensional space cross to sphere.
Okay,
and to sphere
is... So this is logarithmic for R minus A, is that, that is the usual kind of source. Is that what we would expect for a singular string source?
Well,
For what's going on?
Well, if we have just a singular, if we had a flat space sum, right? The flat space sum would allow for us, you know, the solution 1 plus q squared over r squared, as I said before, right? Okay. Now, because the transfer space time really is not flat anymore, the metric itself, our regular, gives us a non-trivial solution, okay, that actually near the end of the space time happens to behave irregularly.
I'm just trying to figure out what that singularity means. Is it, put another way, there's an equation of motion. If you work in flat set, then minus h is equal to a delta function.
Right.
So is this something like
Yes, indeed it does, right? That's the problem.
So the dimensionality, is that what's going on?
Well, you see, before everything was W goes to 0, as R goes to A, right?
Yeah.
And so this typically... I'm solving for all R's. All R's in this regime, right? I'm solving it in the whole,
Is R equals A a coordinate singularity, or is there a singularity?
It's not. R equals A is not coordinate singularity of the space-time. Space-time is perfectly well behaved. The transfer space-time has perfectly well behaved geometry.
This is not a principle monopole.
Yeah,
this is not a principle monopole.
Well, you're talking about the metric here, or you're talking about the solution?
This one, bro. You can even count, no? Just count with that. Yeah.
So, but in four dimensions, Richard-Hansen is a big, it's more symmetric, right? I'm dropping a one. It's already to talk math, yes.
Let me phrase it another way. If you take the box H, if you integrate it over the whole space after a big circular infinity, then you get a surface term, because H can work 1 over R squared. Okay, so that tells you that, I think it tells you that the box H can't vanish out of the origin.
Well, that means they're conserved charge, right?
But you just take an electrostatics when we solve the Laplace equation for a point charge. Say we solve a box time is zero and for a squad is going to R, but then what we're solving is box time is delta function.
Right. Yes.
So it's asking whether it's the same situation.
Yeah, is there a delta function?
On the right hand side or not, right?
The coefficient C1 is sort of indeterminate.
So
how do you
go
to one
point during its
name? Well, it's still angular coordinates, right? It's still, so there is S2, right? But it's a two-sphere that is not the capacity.
We integrate over an annulus, right? One boundary being the big sphere, the other boundary being close to R equals A. We get contribution, we only get zero, right?
Well, you could ask it the way I just said, you can't integrate box H and you integrate it over the disk.
That's right.
All the way down, and if it satisfies box H equals zero, then that integral vanishes. And you can turn that integral into a surface integral and tell you the flux going on vanishes. But that seems to contradict the Weber-Osberg behavior.
That's what I'm, that's, yeah, right.
Let's see, large, you see large R, you're talking about large R behavior. You see, large R behavior gives me a trivial harmonic function, okay? You see? So I'm not really putting delta, well, large R gives me R infinity, right?
Well, you're saying this isn't, okay, so there isn't.
I'm not putting delta function explicitly there. I'm solving box H equals zero without the delta.
Well, there's no function in the last statement that H equals like 1 over R squared. Sorry, it's 1, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, if you spell that out.
No, I agree, you do, okay. You're right, if it's log equal 1 plus order 1 over R squared, and explained, indeed, that is the case, yeah.
So in the case like 1 plus 2 R squared over R squared.
Yeah, right.
So the integral of box H
looks like it.
Looks like it.
So, sounds like there might be a source of it.
Well, you see, if you integrate, basically you don't want to go over dr, right? So if we're a delta function here, right, integral over dr would then give me a constant. Okay? And then I do one more integral, right, by doing that. Okay. So indeed, I think you're right. When I do one more integral, there is implicitly a delta function here, right? Because it's like for the same reason, like you do the the ordinary flat space is the same thing. It just here, as you know, you're mentioning is now you have W goes to zero and makes the behavior of this function irregular. Irregular in the sense that as we go toward R equal A, the solution is not well behaved. Well, you know, with the delta function in flat space, then R equals zero is also not well behaved.
Let me ask another question, which is, I think this was a mistake. I thought you said that when you found the ultra-harmonic form, that you were going to get smooth solutions? Or do I misunderstand?
No, this is, you know, there are two step things.
This is an ultra-harmonic form.
Yeah, this is a harmonic form without any fluxes, right? So the idea is that I'm trying to solve I'm trying to find the solution.
Oh, you're going to add the flux now.
I'm going to add the flux. There are two step things, and I want to do it, just to sort of modulate, you know, how fluxes take care of this, and behavior, even at R equal A, becomes regular. So that is the
last one. C1 is an integration constant?
It's indeterminate, integration constant. Okay. Actually, it's going to be the same integration constant, like with additional fluxes, I'm going to turn it to be zero.
It's the same as the source, so we're going to turn the fluxes.
Exactly, that's the whole point. That's exactly, the delta source, and so that's the whole point. So let me just point out. Exactly. So that, in some way, that's another way of putting it. We'll see, shortly how I said the same constant C that is associated with this flux to zero and still make a regular solution. So that's the correct way of putting that. So now let me try to modify my Lagrangian by introducing additional terms in the Lagrangian associated with Trans-Simons terms that have the origin actually in the heterotic stream compacted on K3 spaces in terms of U1 gauge field strengths that line the Cartan subalgebra of the 8 cosine interspin 32. So I'm modifying my Lagrangian by adding transonic strips associated with U1 field strengths within the context of a geodetic strip compatible on K3, which is six-dimensional theory, will modify our equations of motion. Okay, due to the terms that are proportional to the field strength of U1 charges of the Cartan algebra of cross 8 or speed 32. So I have the transonic term, so I have now a freedom of turning on additional fluxes associated with the U1 field, like we turn on just a single U1 field. Okay. And now in this case, I have still the same type of those stream hazards for F3 field strengths and for the metric, but now I'm turning on the U1 fields that are supported by a two-form, which is harmonic and subdual and lives on this four-dimensional transfer space done with the Johansson type, or with the Johansson type metric. Okay? Actually, such forms do exist. Okay? They can be written in terms of field binary of this Johansson metric that I will before explicitly like that. And as a consequence of the form supporting U1 field strength, this transgression terms will modify equations of motion for the field strength, string field strength, which in turn will modify our equation of motion for the harmonic function. So the Laplacian in the transfer space on this harmonic function is not equal to zero anymore, but now this is actual source that those additional fluxes provide. Okay? For the original subdual field strength of the stream.
So, okay. I understand it. You have some instant form caused by this gauge field F which add, and in the original picture, the instant form was zero, so at the singular point I equals I, and now we resolve it, and you know, it seems to be out.
Well, indeed, it's a smooth solution right now, right? It smoothed out over the lives on the smooth space time. It's not a delta function or something of that type. Okay, then we, so yeah.
But it is. I mean, it is taking a zero size in some time.
And blowing it.
Don't do it in the finite size. And
yes.
I mean, at least in SF for spin 32, we're supposed to also resolve the singularity associated with zero size instantons by having a restored SPKH symmetry. Is there is that
so our previous solution should be the vibrate?
Yeah.
First of all, I'm
going to zero size vibrate, but with SPKH symmetry, which doesn't seem to which resolves in singular.
She's just looking at the classical solutions. Have you ever seen that in the classical solutions?
Well,
I
don't know.
Well,
at zero size, you should just include an SPK gauge in your lower-edge description.
If you do the zero-mode analysis of the collective coordinates in the solid-point solution will discover
discovered there's an SPK here, so the truth is zero size. This doesn't have to be in the headlines, go ahead, you're just...
Could you say, sorry,
well,
it doesn't have to be...
You mentioned that the supergravity arises in K3 reduction in headlines, trying to you're eventually going to be applying this machine more in type 2 than the headlines.
Exactly, type 2 BMM theory. This is really for illustration, and nobody even to the point, I'm just trying to illustrate the idea. Complex and doing it for the non-trivial case on transfer space that is your chief flag, but non-trivial like four-dimensional space. So this is just illustration. Okay? And so with this specific explicit two-form, we modify the harmonic function. This form is R-squared normalizable, namely as R goes toward A is finite, as R goes toward infinity, it falls off fast enough, and as a consequence, the harmonic function that solves this now modified equation takes this form. Okay. So now we are dealing with two integration constants. Actually, there is one integration constant, okay, and the rest is fixed, okay? And that's precisely this original singular thing, okay, that we treat in such a way that you remove the, any kind of delta source at r equal a. And the only source for the harmonic function comes from this, from the transgression term. And it's supported by this to form square. And so with appropriate choice of integration constant, we get now a completely regular solution. The additional flux is really regular, the original string solution that is now completely regular in the whole regime. Okay. Actually, we write this harmonic function terms of the proper coordinate in this transverse space, available according to transverse spacetime. It doesn't have simple form 1 plus q square, q over r square. It really they are subleading terms, okay, in terms of proper coordinate on the transfer space term. So nevertheless, as we take r to infinity, or in other words, let me do instead reducing now this solution on angular coordinates, okay, on three angular coordinates. And we're writing the theory as three-dimensional solution. What I get is a three-dimensional minimal solution, okay, which is the original word volume of the string, and so this is the extra regular coordinate that takes the simple form in terms of constants proportional to the strength of U1 fields, and the is formed with a W that has its origin in the construction of which has a metric. So what we see is we have found a completely regular solution that in three dimensions describes completely regular the main wall that asymptotically approaches the ABS3 geometry. Namely, and in the decoupling limit, when we drop this constant, this is really ABS3 geometry. But now it really, through ABS CFT correspondence, we are relating this gravity solution to a two-dimensional field theory that is conformal, that has one half of the original maximal supersymmetry.
The ABS geometry is deformed by W, is that right?
Asymptotically, at large R, you see it's still ABS3.
Okay.
As we go in the interior, it's of course deformed, but it's regular everywhere.
Okay.
Asymptotically only in the ultraviolet.
Some relevant operation of the deformal theory?
Most likely it's a relevant operator that deforms the theory in the infrared in this specific way. So in the infrared the theory is not of course ABS3, but it's regular. So we have in principle the infrared description from the gravity side of this theory that is regular, and we can address, you know, typical issues, whether there is confinement in this regime or how does the spectrum look like, for example, from minimally coupled scalar fields and so on. So this is at least the rough first consequences of having some completely regular geometry in this particular case. And it allows us to do those simple things to begin with right away. Of course, there's much more detailed study of identifying real operators and conformal dimensions, at least in the ultraviolet of the behavior, which operators deform the steering down in the infrared to that type of geometry. Okay. But that's, this is a different, more detailed study. Okay. So that was really a prototype example that I tried to use to illustrate the idea. And now one can go on and describe this aspect for other examples. Okay. So the well-known example that is driving the field is the example of the three-grain solutions. Okay. Where, just to repeat this case, one indeed has transimage terms that are turned on when additional three-form field strengths are turned on, both Ramon Ramon and Edgar Schwartz three-form field strengths that are now supported in the case of six-dimensional Ricci flat space by three forms that live on the space. Okay. And so solving equations of motion, this is now in the context of type 2b supergravity, will give us the example of deformed solutions, resolved solutions, where the harmonic function satisfies this modified equation that is supported by the deformed constraints that are determined in terms of harmonics of the three forms on which it flat spaces. So there are examples of deformed conifold and resolved conifold, both studied, first one studied by Clavin and Strasser, second one by Pando, Zayas, and Seidlin, that lead to the so-called fraction degree brain solutions. I want to emphasize that actually it's very important, the behavior of this theory crucially depends on the features of the constructed three form. Okay. It's cool. If we want to have regular solution in the interior, this three form necessarily has to be regular in the interior. By the way, that's not the case for the second example, and the solution turns out to be badly singular. Okay. Asymptotically, as was she showed me, these three forms are not L squared normalizable. They do not follow fast enough. So actually, asymptotically, we have deviations from the ADS5 geometry. Those logarithmical corrections, which we now understand, is related to the logarithmic flow of the difference of each couplings in this dual field theory. So this is the rather well-known and studied example. So let me instead focus on things where we contributed. So those are examples of M2 grains. In this case, now we are dealing with 11-dimensional supergravity. Indeed, the modified Lanky identity for form field strength takes this form. And now in this case, what we are dealing is with a modified M2 brain ansatz. So the transfer spacetime is 8-dimensional Ricci flat spacetime. The original 4-form field strength is modified. An additional term associated with harmonic subdual 4-forms on 8-dimensional Ricci flat space. Okay. This modification just gives us non-zero contribution and modifies the Bianchi identity. As a consequence, the equations of motion are satisfied if the harmonic function again is subject to this equation. Okay. So depending what the properties of these four forms are, that is going to be reflected in the properties of the corresponding resolved M2 brain solution. Okay. As a matter of principle. Now, another example that I'm going to focus on is example of D2 brains. So those are examples of type 2A supergravity theory.
What's a quantization condition on M?
One should in principle, but we are mainly really doing the classical.
Classical,
but they could be in principle, just along the lines of Mendelssohn and units. Okay. But I'm focusing on this, that's really on progress on the classical side. Okay. So a modified Bianchi identities in this case involve 4-form and 3-form field strengths as well as Billiton. The brain ansatz has the 7-dimensional transfer space-time, which would be Ricci flat and corresponds to G2 Polyomini manifolds. Okay. The corresponding ansatz for 4-form field strengths, it's the O case plus dual of the 3-form that lives on G2 Holonomy space, and 3-form field strength is supported also by the same harmonic 3-form. So this is the correct result, and if harmonic functions satisfy this equation, this is solution of equations of motion. Again, regularity of the solution crucially depends on the properties of the corresponding 3-form serial number which is like G2 Holonomy space. So this is an issue of how to deal with such solutions in a general context. But to be more concrete, that led us really to develop a number of more mathematical aspects. In particular, what one has to turn to is to study that Ricci flat special Holonomy spaces. And in particular, if you want to construct explicit forms, we need explicit metrics. So one can focus on the type of Ricci flat spaces, and they fall sort of in that type of classes. They are killer Ricci flat spaces that can be constructed in all even dimensions. Hyperkiller ones are another example that are constructing the dimensions of multiples of four, and there are also special Kolani spaces in seven dimensions that have G2 Kolani, and eight dimensions that have spin 7 Kolani. Those in particular have fewer covariantly constant spinners, filling spinners here, supersymmetries, and thus, if you can construct configurations of that type of spaces, we are dealing with a gravity description of dual field theory class supersymmetry, least supersymmetry. So in most of the examples that I'm going to describe and that we actually worked out, we focus on cohomogeneity one type rigid flat spaces that describes as cones over Einstein spaces. That will be the main focus.
The definition of cohomogeneity one means?
That the metric coefficients depend only on one radial coordinate, which is the coordinate associated with this cone. Construction, and so that, so in our, along this direction, you know, the first step was really to explicitly construct Ricci flat metrics that were actually known but applying it to our cases, and then as a consequence to construct harmonic forms. This harmonic forms, and in turn, if we have explicit form, would tell us about the properties of the gravity solution. In the later part, things have led us also to new developments. Actually, we are constructing new special Kolani spaces, and that's new potential interesting properties of M-theory solutions and new special Kolani spaces. So as far as harmonic forms go, we moved on and constructed middle dimension forms in a class of Kolani metrics, the so-called Stenzel metrics. Actually, this Ricci flat metrics, the Kolani metrics that I'm getting to shortly, can be defined in all even dimensions. Well, we are mainly interested in up to 10, right? Maybe 12. Okay. But nevertheless, one can construct such middle dimension forms in any dimensions. Basically, shortly, we've done construction also in other classes of kilometrics, which I won't go into. Also, hyperkilometrics, which I also won't go into. I'll briefly mention some of the aspects of constructions of forms on metrics with G2 Kolani and SP7 Kolani because they are relevant for resolving two brain and M2 brains with new supersymmetry. And the last part that I'm afraid I'm not going to get there easily with the new aspects of new type of spin-7 Kolani spaces and their implications for theory convective equations. So, so going to the example of the Stenzel metric, this is the sort of a good prototype example of Ricci flat Kolani metrics that are resolutions of the cone over SOM plus 2 over SOM manifold. The space has SOM plus 2 symmetry, and the metric construction actually is in terms of the so-called left invariant 1 forms that live on this SOM plus 2 group manifold. One can split those left invariant forms in terms of SOM plus 2 over SOM course of description in terms of the two types of forms associated with indexes 1 and 2. And maybe this is convenient description of left invariant forms in terms of this course of description that involves that three sets of one forms. The metric ansatz is the cone metric ansatz, where coefficients A, B, A, B, C, and H depend only on R. That's what I mean by cohomogeneity one. Okay. Now, the Ricci flatness condition actually reduces in principle to solving first order differential equations. Here, I just for the concreteness, one can also, of course, construct the field binder that I'm going to use later, and it so turns out that it's, there are ways of writing this field binder in terms of the complex one forms that will be useful later for constructing middle-dimension forms. I will briefly tell you that, okay? But not much. Okay? So, it turns out that Ricci flatness conditions can be rewritten as a supersymmetric Lagrangian system. The conditions that the metric is Ricci flat can be written as solution for this coefficients of the Lagrangian that is supersymmetric. Namely, it's a non-linear sigma model in principle that has a superpotential that in terms of this original coordinates takes the specific form. So solving equations of motion for Ricci flatness reduces to solving the first order differential equations for these elements in terms of the superpotential. So these first order equations reduce with particular rescaling of radial coordinates to this set of three first order differential equations.
Yeah. Do you have any algorithm for finding that superpotential?
No.
You just try things.
It's try thing. This I have to say, this is our problem. And it becomes like an intuition thing. You know? Because especially as we start deforming those things with extra fluxes, that's superpotential. Some cases one can do it and some one cannot. But for just this metric part itself, all the examples that are known do reduce to that type of structures, and it's a guesswork. The point is that actually that has been constructed by mathematicians, but that what we are doing is we are rewriting that in physics language. The Stenzel constructed it, you know. Yeah. Not Stenzel did it, you know, by using actual techniques that Chris Polk and Gary Goodwin used in some other contexts. But we sort of revolve these things in our physics language. Okay, all right, so let me go on because I'm nowhere. I should blame you that you ask. My things are so simple, you know, in the simple stages. Anyway. So one can solve this first order equations and get explicit answer. You say I don't have answer to simple questions, so why would you let me go to the Anyway, so one can solve those equations again, miracle. We don't have well-established techniques to solve this first order differential equations. Often maple could be miraculously helpful in things like that. So those are our hidden weapons that in this particular case it reduces to a rather explicit form of this coefficients that depend only on radial coordinate and depending in which dimension we are, all we have to solve is this elementary integral that then in the case of n equal 1, 2, and 3, it's very simple. It's just simple elementary functions to which it reduces. But n equal 1 case is actually four-dimensional Ricci flat metric, which is the previous Ricci Hansen example I talked about. Okay. N equal 2 example is the deformed conical example of Candelas and Della Rosa that actually Klebanov and Strasser used to construct forms there. But n equal 3 and higher should be called Stenzel metric. As physicists, we would stop at n equal 3, that corresponds to eight-dimensional transverse spacetime, and that would give us information on problems of result and two brains.
Are the other higher dimension cases also non-unique?
Of course, there are a lot more and more examples. I'm showing you one prototype.
A class,
you know. Yes, we worked on another example, so where the base space was U1 bundle over product of Keeler spaces, subcases like that. But really, there is no systematic way of building up because already in four dimensions, we are not really sure whether we have covered everything. Here I'm telling you sort of the canonical example. They are hyperkeeler spaces. For example, Ricci Hansen is also hyperkeeler. But then in six dimension, it's a Calabi-type matrix that we also guess, but I don't want to go into that. This is just showing you a prototype example here. So this metric, as we say, is cone over, result cone over SRN plus 2 over SRN. With the Einstein-type metric, so at large radius, it takes this particular form in terms of the left invariant one form that we introduced earlier. At small r, it's of course regular. Okay? And so what we end up is with a regular n plus 1 sphere cross just flat space time. Okay? So this sphere that in the Johansson case becomes R2 cross S2, okay, with S2 corresponding to the dual. But now we have generalizations to all n's. Now one can set out to construct harmonic nil dimension forms. So P plus Q forms, where P plus Q is equal to n plus P plus Q is equal to n plus 1. Okay. So the actual symmetry of the metric enables us to write the answers for such harmonic form in terms of this complexified field binder that I introduced earlier. Okay. And the full structure is completely determined just in terms of two ordinary functions. Actually, because the form satisfy this self-duality type condition, the harmonicity condition reduces just to that equation, which for those particular functions F1 and F2 is just a system of first-order homogeneous differential equations. It could be easily solved. Again, secret weapon is used. And it comes in terms of such hypergeometric functions. Well, that looks very complicated, but keep in mind P and Qs are integer. So for specific P and Q, in particular, even dimension, okay, those are completely elementary functions. Okay. I'm going to focus especially on those that have P and Q close in value, really the most symmetric ones. And in space times that are multiples of 4, in this case, the PP forms are determined completely in terms of this elementary function. L square of this form is well behaved, falls off very fast, and it's regular at small r. So those are L square normalizable forms. So when we're dealing with the four-dimensional space-time or eight-dimensional spencer space-time, which is all for M2 brains, we're dealing with the completely normalizable forms. Those M2 solutions will be completely irregular, just the way this self-dual resolve field was completely irregular solution. But now in the dimensions that are multiples of, you know, 6, 12, and so on, and in particular 6 is relevant for physics, the only forum that where P and Q are closest together is of that structure. Again, it's explicitly determined in terms of elementary functions, but as it turns out, it's marginally normalizable. So namely, there is, instead of falling integral over radial distance of this form, will give us a result that goes logarithmically with this distance. Okay? And that's typical for the forms used by Kellerman and Schlesinger. As we go to making P and Q more and more different, then the degree of normalizability just grows. So really, if we want to focus on really irregular solutions, we have to focus on those type of forms. And in space time that are multiples of 4, they are completely L-square normalizable. So I said that already a number of times. Those are examples that we discussed. That would be the Kolmogorov-Strasser example. And let me turn to this one, which is resolved on two brain. I could repeat the whole thing for eight dimensions, but I've done it for n, so let me not go over. Those are just explicit formulae for the metric. The 2,2 harmonic form, and now we solve equations for the harmonic function, now supported by the harmonic flow form of that type, and as expected, the result is still rather explicit in terms of elliptic functions, and it turns out to be completely irregular. Namely, at large r, it behaves effectively as the result regular, no, behaves effectively as a regular N2-brain. Namely, it falls off in the same way the space-time asymptotically approaches ADS4. Sorry, yes, ADS4. Okay. So because in the decoupling limit, you really, it's the same type of radial behavior as for the ordinary N2-brain, but at small distances, as a constant, the harmonic function is constant. Okay, it's regular, so it's completely a regular solution, and so the gravity behaves well, both in the ultraviolet and in the infrared, and so one could do at least brute force for things like addressing how, whether there's confinement in the interior, the spectrum, and so on.
Can I ask you a question on the previous transparency?
Yes.
Even previous to the flight.
No previous, right?
That one's right. So you were saying that if P and Q aren't adjacent to each other, then the fall off is different from longer length.
Then they fall off much less strongly.
So, in this case,
you're talking 3.0 volume for an
Right. So, if there is a dual field theory, what's the interpretation of that?
First of all, I have to tell you that there are no issues that I'm turning on right now, which is supersymmetry. Actually, so it turns out that other forms that are, P and Q bigger than one, actually typically do not correspond to supersymmetric solutions.
So you think there isn't a dual field theory?
Yeah, it's not, you can't, maybe you can use it, but you see, because they fall off much less, what happens is, you don't have asymptotically, you don't have this easy behavior that you would interpret.
Are you saying that those are unstable?
I'm not saying that they are unstable, no, they are not supersymmetric. Yeah. As classical solutions, they are not BPS. But also what happens is, as I look, at the result solution asymptotically, we don't fall off fast enough, First of all, they don't go to ADS4, but, they come with, in the case of this case.
So they don't have the expected RG12 behavior, but you don't have an interpretation.
No.
So what's the amount of this correspond to?
Sorry?
What forms of this correspond, I'm sorry.
What?
You have a fourth form, which is kind
of... There are still four forms, but they are, in terms of this complexified field dynamic, they are not of the symmetric form. They are like 4.0, 3.1, for example. 3.1 would be the maximum.
But also there are other forms in principle. I mean, for example, you could use a gravity photon and a 6-form element on the brain, which would give a vortex on the field theory. Did you try using like a 2-6-form, for example, on the 8-dimensional triangular space? Would the same sound to what I
think? Well, in principle, one can address any of those things. I think as far as this particular resolution through transversion, those are the relevant ones. So let me talk about resolve and some of the properties. Okay, that's the issue of the supersymmetry. Okay, one has to, in principle, to see that we do have supersymmetry, these additional forms have to have the property that they turn on field strengths when properly contracted onto the covariantly constant spinner of the original special phenomenon space time are annihilated. So in some ways, those are solutions with additional fluxes that then preserve the same number of supersymmetries as the original space, special holonomy space-time, plus, the turning on the original flux also breaks it one half. But these fractional fluxes, additional fluxes, do not break additional supersymmetries. And so we have to ensure that, and not all forms have this property. For example, Pandu-Zayas and Simon form does not have this property, that's why we claim it's actually not a supersymmetric solution. Okay. The examples of forms that we found, for example, this example of middle dimensional Sternsen form does preserve supersymmetry, in general. And so we want to focus on those examples. What is interesting as far as result and to brains go is that actually there's only one conserved charge associated with the original M2 brain. If we try to identify the flux that would be related to M5 brain, that in some three cycles in this case, we see that the form that supports this additional fluxes it's actually such that it falls off fast enough, too fast, and there is no conserve charge. So it's, we cannot call those brain fractional brains because they're not additional taxes, so we resort to calling them zone brains. Okay. And as Herzog and Kovalev pointed out, actually the real field theory of discretional dysregulatory solution is that of really conformal field theory, where we perturb the original conformal field theory with the relevant operators. Okay, and they are also associated with pseudo-scalar fields in the dual field theory. And it so happens, I showed you one prototype example for the Bayesian tensor metric, but we have lots of other examples, as I say, hyperkeler examples, other classes of Keeler metrics, as well as spin 7 holonomy metric. All of them have this property. All the conical with energy transfer spacetime, which is spacetime, would give us resolved solutions that actually correspond to and two configurations without any additional fractional charges. I could go to D2 brains, but I'm afraid I don't have much time. You know, I have actually a number of things I'd like to talk. It is all D2 brain, which maybe it's not that.
Why don't you talk about the very last screen? You said the work ahead of time.
Yes. The list is. You see, that's where I am now. Okay. So I could talk about fractional D2 brains. A difference for the case of fractional D2 brains as opposed to resolved N2 brains for on the known D2 holonomy spaces is that we do have fractional charges. We get regular solutions, but there are always fractional charges. In some case, the fractional charges supplied by the D4 brain wrapping the 2-cycle, and in some cases, MS5 brain wrapping the 3-cycle. You know, there are two classes of non-G2 holonomy spaces. So in one class, we have D4 brains wrapping 2 cycles, providing additional fractional charge, and in the other cases, with the MS5 brains.
There's supersymmetric 2-cycles and G2 holonomy spaces. I thought there were only supersymmetric 3-4 cycles.
No. It's D4 brain wrapping S2, because at the end we are talking about fractional D2 brains.
So that
yes.
You can have homology that's supersymmetric cycle. You have an associative calibration and a co-associative calibration. So you don't have a supersymmetric 2 cycles.
But we jump that there's supersymmetric in the fraction. Yes.
We can wrap that as 5 brains, and we get fractional D2 brains for like 5 brains.
Yes.
We get fractional D2 brains for like 5 brains.
Yes, that's a good point you're making. But the point is, if you lift this to 11 dimensions, you're lifting it on a circle. You're not talking now about conical 8-dimensional G-flash space, because the circle is sort of by itself. So examples for the other M2 brains were all conical. But I'm going to get here. You know, maybe I should skip this part because I think I would rather tell you a bit about this new spin-7 holonomy spaces. And in a split second, I'll tell you something about M3 brains and sort of supersymmetry. Okay? So I'll skip that and mention the properties of M2 brains on novel spin-7 holonomy spaces. Well, the old spin-7 holonomy spaces, again, are cones over S3 bundle, which is the instanton bundle, over 4-sphere. So the level surfaces correspond to square 7 spheres, where the S3 bundle includes SU2 instantons that live on S4. Okay. So the explicit metric could be actually written that way, depends only on radial coordinate. Okay. And then we have the 3-sphere, the SU2 instantons that define the S3 instanton bundle, and then we have a 4-sphere. Okay. So those are examples we worked out fine. We found harmonic four forms, normalizable, get regular resolve, and 3 brains with no additional charges. Okay. And now the idea was that actually one can generalize the solutions in principle by taking this S3 bundle and rewriting it as U1 bundle over S2. We are additional squashing this S3 bundle, namely we are rewriting this part in terms of 2 terms as S1 bundle over S2. Okay, and the corresponding SU2 instant one terms, you know, are properly included in the definition of the SU1 bundles, and correspondingly the old S2 bundle over S4. Okay, so you see the structure of S2 over S4 is precisely the structure that corresponds to G2 type Coulomb spaces. Okay? It's not now because everything is squashed with coefficients A, B, C that are all depending on R. But the idea is to find motivation really.
Can you do that in a way that's consistent with the original fibration of the S4?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, of course. That's the formula.
I mean, you now have a very sort of asymmetrical S3 divider, which...
Did you still have an S2 bundle over S4?
Well, it's not... You see, right now, everything is mixed up in general.
We started with S2.
It's only asymptotically. If you compare with me, let me just make this ansatz, let me not go... It's only certain limit, this will become S2 over S4 when the size of this radius is asymptotically become constant, okay? Just, this is the spin 7 holonomy ansatz of squashed type, you know, S3 bundle that you write as U1 bundle over S2 over S4.
I
also
thought that maybe S2 bundle over S4 that would be trivial.
Well, in principle, no, it's not. It's not because you see, this. This S2 involves the SU2. I mean, they are the instantons that live on S4, okay, that define the one forms that enter the metric. So maybe, you know, when I write this, it's the covariant D. Okay? And if I go back to this covariant D description on S2, which I skipped because I didn't discuss resolve the two grains here. Yeah, that's the one. You see this S2 takes this form, and those are the connections of SU2 and those instantons on S4. They're the same in use there. So let me just go on and
it's one of the types of value from the S2.
Excuse me?
On every fiber, okay, you say you have an S2 bundle.
I have S1 bundle over
S2. Okay, so that, if it's a bundle, that means there's a projection down north of the base.
Right.
S2.
Yes.
Good. So that means that I have now an S2 bundle over S4. Right. As Jeff points out, all S2 bundles over S4 are trivial. So it's S4 across S3. So.
Well, G2 for honorary.
G2 for honorary. Yes, G2 for honorary. That's a projection. You can project on every fiber and you get all the data. What?
G2 for honorary.
It would be S3 level of S4.
Yeah, there is an S3. Well, she said she's going to get
the S1. But I can think of the S3 as an S1 for all the color S2.
Yeah, only because the S3 is round. She's talking about this before.
The original is the coulomb, right? So now I'm double squashing the ansatz. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are talking, you know, the principal orbit of the original thing is squash hemisphere that I'm writing there as S3 bundle over S4. Okay. Now I'm going to do one more squashing of this S3 bundle. Okay. And I'm going to describe it. You see, maybe I can rewrite this thing, okay? A equal B corresponds to this case, okay? But A not equal B can be written as S1 bundle over S2.
You bring the bundle, sorry. Well,
maybe it's the... Namely, you know, in terms of the answer, A equal B is the old SP7. And now, it is not totally obvious and trivial, right, to rewrite this S3 in terms of squashed ansatz, S1 bundle over S2, but one can do that. Okay? And the SU2 instantons are playing a crucial role in all that. So the reason, you know, that we try this ansatz is that actually spin, all spin 7 Coulombic metric, whose principal orbits are S3 bounds over S4, somehow resembles in principle the G2 Coulombic spaces that are S bounds over S4.
Then there's another thing, there's the practice, sorry, but S2 bounds over S4 are very trivial, all trivial, right?
No, those are, no, those are items. The political are trivial, but the symmetric aren't, right?
Okay, well.
Of course, you know, S3 over S3 is trivial bundle, but it's.
No, there are non-trivial S3 bundles over S4.
But the G2 Coulombic metric, the particular one, is right, it's equal to trivial.
Okay, it's a trivial bundle, but it's not a round metric as well.
Right. So topology is, but it's the actual, yeah. Okay, so I guess that was.
There are some numbers on S4 that arise from the instant time physics, for example. Just like there are not some numbers on S2.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so
that's
the
first
one. So this turns out then allows us in principle to potentially start connecting some of the M2 solutions to D2 solutions if we find the relationship of connections between speed 7, general speed 7 Coulombic and G2 Coulombic metric. Actually, one can solve Ricci's lattice conditions for this particular ansatz. They reduce again the first order equations that we can solve and find a special solution. Okay? It's a special solution in this case that we can write in terms of this is U1 bundle over S2, then this is the region S4. The order coefficients depend only on the radial coordinate. Okay? So it is a generalization of the previous spin 7 Coulombic example. And it has an interesting property. As we approach a short distance behavior, okay, as we go toward R equal 3L, in this case, this becomes the same metric at short distance as the old spin 7 Coulombic metric. So it becomes again locally R4 plus S4, S4 providing the bold. Okay? So it's so it has the same behavior at small distances, but at large distances it's a new behavior of the space. So maybe if we go to large R, the size of the circle becomes constant. Okay? And the rest of the space indeed approaches the space associated with the G2 Coulombic metric. Okay. Then it can be written as a cone over S2 cross S4. Okay. So in this limit only. Okay. So this is an example of space-time that asymptotically is not conical because the size of the circle becomes constant. So it's really cylindrical type, and that resembles more Paul-Gnat behavior in higher dimensions. We just called it like that. There's one branch, okay? There is another branch, actually, with the same solution, special solution, that is obtained by analytically continuing to negative R or taking this resolution parameter to be negative. Okay. And in this case, we get another spin 7 Coulombic manifold complete that at short distances, interestingly enough, it becomes locally just R8. So the 7 sphere is not squashed anymore, but just becomes regular 7 sphere. And then at large distances, it has the same topology as the other one. Okay. So in some way, it's sort of interesting that we have like two branches that are related to each other through analytic continuation. And this may tell us something about M theory in such spin 7 manifolds. We actually found a more general class of spin 7 Coulombic spaces that basically fall into the class of BH type. They have the same type of topology, except in special cases where they completely reduce to S1 cross G2, or in the other limit completely reduced to the old spin 7. Okay. But it's a continuous parameter, additional parameter, that classifies this whole class of spin 7 Coulombic metrics that actually can be expressed analytically up to quadratures. Okay, so which is quite intriguing that one can end up with relatively explicit solutions for that type of manifolds. And so it provides a useful, another class of Ricci flat spin 7 holonomy spaces. And of course, now we can turn and look at what happens to membranes on such spaces. And what we observe is that in addition to the original L2 brain charge, now we do have an additional fractional charge. And its origin is really that, you know, asymptotically, we were not in the conicus, but the circle played a non-trivial role. So we do have fractional charge. It's actually magnetic 5 brains, the M5 brains wrapping a 3-cycle. That gives a fraction to bring. And now if you reduce on this fiber, on this S1, we can get down to type 2A theory. So whatever this resolved solution is, in lower dimension, we get information on two brain. Okay. So in this case, we're talking about resolved V2 brains when dimension reduced on this circle. And what we get is not the regular resolved V2 brains that we mainly talked about, namely V2 brains and V4 brains wrapping 2-cycle in the other examples. We are dealing also with the 6 brain, which is, you know, natural consequence, you know, when we reduce eight-dimensional space on S1.
I'm still confused what these D4 brains wrap. If the holonomy is bigger than SU3, there can't be a supersymmetric 2-cycle. So do you really mean it's a 2-cycle or?
Well, there is non-trivial charge associated if I integrate over S3 at the board. Okay. There is a non-trivial charge associated with it. Yes, you know, there are other non-trivial things that are consequences of non-compact examples, like some of the issues with 6-dimensional cases. So some statements, you know, do not apply when you are doing non-compact spaces.
Because she was constructing something which topologically is R from S2 to S4, with the metric on S2 and S4 varying.
It's the non-compact example that we have. Right. That is the example that is non-compact. So I will do the compact.
Yeah, because otherwise you can make anterior energy to non-compact, and then I'm to play on this supersymmetric 2-cycle until we get the BPS plastic and it equals 1 for dimensions.
Right, which doesn't exist.
Which doesn't exist.
But it must have to do with non-compact, and then you can never do the reduction before the equals 1.
Right, they are really not non-compact. There are a number of other issues, you know, the certain forms that you think would not exist do exist on the non-compact spaces. It's another phenomenon that happens in the resolved orbifold case, for example, non-compact resolved. So the last thing, that is somewhat related to the previous examples, is trying to compactify. Writing MTA on the form due to holonomy spaces will return on additional four-form field strength in such a way that the metric ansatz has a power that has 3+1 concurrent variance. Okay? So we term those examples as M3 brain solutions. Okay? So this is, let me show you just an explicit example. When we write a metric on a variant of G2 holonomy space that has a topology of small r as R4 crosses 3. Okay. So in principle, you see those are the left invariant forms on SO3, sigma 1 and capital sigma 1. Okay. And so they correspond to S3 bundles over S3. Okay. But I'm going to change those coefficients to be different from the original G2 holonomy example. Okay. And introduce an additional form, okay? And so this is indeed an ansatz that effectively corresponds to some M3 solution on G2 type holonomy space.
Well, see, it's not a wrapped M5 or something.
No, it's not. I'll get that shortly. There are no conserved charges associated with it. There is turn-on four-form field strength that is supported by a four-form, harmonic four-form, associated with the form G2 space. Okay. But what is crucial now is when you turn on this fourth form, you're actually modifying your Einstein's equations. Modifying your Einstein's equations means you're modifying the original Csitok-Halahanyi metric. We were able to arrive again with particular ansatz in terms of first order differential equations using this technique of supersymmetric Lagrangian and actually solve it by, again, you know, educated guesswork. And turns out we were able to get explicit solution in this case in terms of this H function and coefficients A and B that are now expressed in terms of U function and H. Okay. L parameter sort of specifies the gravitational instanton on G2 space, and the coefficient C specifies the amount of turn on for foreign field strengths. Okay. The solution takes here in this form, and I should say that we have other examples for other two types of G2-Halahanyi spaces, as well as some work with the new classes of G2-Halahanyi spaces that is separate, unpublished. So, interesting feature of this solution is the following. Asymptotically, there is no mass, mass associated with that. There is no conserved charge. Fluxes associated with four form field strength are zero. Okay. The solutions are bad. They're singular, but we resort to enhance some type thing to handle it. Nevertheless, I'm going to go on with this.
But do you know that there's an enhanced mechanism?
No, no, I do not know that. No. It's M theory, and so I would have to. No, I do not know. But nevertheless, you know, we start with a regular solution, something goes badly wrong inside. So I'm going to...
Oh, it's just not a solution.
No, well, it's solution of classical equations of motion, right?
I mean, it's got a singularity, isn't it?
Not as a singularity, but all the way there. About 6 years ago, I was talking about massless, dionic black holes, and people like Joe and a few others gave me a terribly hard time. You know? Now we are all dealing with those things, so let me go on. Because we may be onto something interesting.
So no matter who catch you, you'll catch you.
Anyway, let me point out an interesting property of the solutions. I told you that the way we solve these solutions, found the solutions by solving first order differential equation. Using this supersymmetric Lagrangian method, we guessed the right superpotential, found the solution, and they were solutions of first order differential equations that at the same time solve, of course, the full second order differential equations. Okay. So that naturally leads you to suspect the solutions have to have some supersymmetry. Okay. And so what hung us out for 2 weeks is having problems with proving that those solutions are supersymmetric. Keep in mind that what we are dealing with is G2-Halahanyi space that has only one killing spinner left. Now we are turning on additional flux. Okay? We cannot break much more. You know, either this flux will cut itself in a miraculous way, okay? But it adjusts itself in a strange way. Okay? By looking at the killing spinner equations, we see that this solution, okay, if it had satisfied the supersymmetry, then the variations of fermions of the 11 dimensional supersymmetry would be zero. Okay. Now, standard supersymmetry transformation of 11 dimensional supergravity involve these coefficients k1 and k2 being equal 1. But this solution is actually all the examples, by now we have like 4 or 5, actually we have continuous parameter examples, okay, that have the property that this solution, supersymmetry, would have been satisfied had we modified supersymmetry transformation by putting instead of k2 equal 1, k2 equal 3/2. So it's a vacuum that satisfies, that has new symmetry.
It's not
a symmetry of Gaussian theory. So we are breaking supersymmetry.
Maybe it's a symmetry of anything.
Well, who knows? But, you know, 11 dimensional theory is as fundamental as we start with, right? But, okay, there may be a hint of something, or, you know, what might be exciting is that this may be a vacuum where we break supersymmetry, but cosmological constant is still zero.
So, if you consider this some number just as a proof that the supersymmetry is broken, is there some yes. relation between the sensory brain and the Fox 3 brain and the...
It's interesting to see how their flat brains are related to examples like that.
It's an interesting question. FR in the flat brain case is just perpendicular to the four dimensional volume.
Right. So is this one. So mainly the full form field strength, okay, involves only directions perpendicular to the whole volume.
Okay, so
it does. Okay, so it may well have.
No, sir, it's just the opposite.
It's opposite of the real case.
You need all the books, one, two, three, four.
Yeah, so I.
This is an M2 brain?
M3 brain. I have four dimensional word volume. You see, what I'm doing is I'm doing M theory on G2 column on the space. Okay? So this is 3 plus 1.
So in order to resolve this Arlok and Hanshaw mechanism, what you really need is something like a fundamental M3 brain, that quote singular source, unquote.
It's hard to explain. Yeah, I don't have the answer on that. I think this is worth exploring what happens in the region, you know, how to interpret the region where, you know, prior to singular, make it singular showing up.
If your flux is a perpendicular, wouldn't you support an M5 rail, which is right?
Yes, we could also do that, but not in this example. We have some other examples when we have spheres and they have no supersymmetry. And so, there are some other examples. I think on this G2 holonomy, which has minimal supersymmetry, I don't think I can do anything else.
I'm calling out a dynamical support, like a Bochinski stress, right? You have some flux is turned on if you just put a probe and frame right
there. Oh, okay.
There, because the flux, you have that for perpendicular, which means an F6 alone, and then the F6 alone goes to copy to the M5 brain, which is terrible. So you could actually have, instead of having a solution go all the way down to the center, where it's similar,
you can
the flux is going to support out the M5 brain, spherical.
Okay. Well, I think those are all interesting things to look at and try to understand better. At this point, you know, let me just mention one thing. You know, we have this strong experimental evidence that all those examples that we found have this property. It would be very nice to show it means in principle, not in an explicit example with explicit metrics, you know, that this may be a more general situation, at least, you know, for M3 type brain things, without resorting to concrete transits of the metric and the four-form question. But that of course, it's complicated. But it's worth pursuing because, you know, having a number of examples, including a continuous parameter example, it's worth, you know, it's indicating maybe something. So I think it's worth exploring all these different issues. So the supersymmetry enhancement type mechanism, so on. So let me just conclude. Okay. So what I tried to give you here is an overview of the program we've been pursuing for the past 6 months, where we try to construct regular gravity solutions with less than maximum supersymmetries. And the technique that we use is to replace the transverse spacetime of such brain configurations with richly flat spaces that have fewer supersymmetries, but adding additional fluxes that are supported by harmonic forms on this transfer spaces, and they in turn, depending on the properties of those forms, this additional fluxes modify equations and render for us supersymmetric example that are regular. Now, along the line, we will add really to more mathematical developments, actually construction of middle dimension harmonic forms, in particular for Stenzel metrics. By the way, Hitchin and his students were pursuing very related things, but you know, once physicists get a hand on those things, they do it hands-on and get results, so we happen to actually delve into some of the things that are of interest to differential geometries. Okay. And so this explicit construction supports and led us to understanding of explicit gravity solutions in particular, M2 brains and D2 brains. And then I showed to you intriguing properties of the new spin 7 holonomy spaces and related properties between M2 brains and D2 brains in this context. I should really admit that where this program is extremely weak is the field theory side. So in particular, the three field theories, we have series of these examples, okay? So we are just trying to understand better some of the field theory aspects and some initial steps that I'm doing together with Max Ressler that I don't have much to report yet. On the other hand, I should mention that this issues of constructing new special holonomy spaces, in particular to understand G2 holonomy spaces better as describing and theory outside G2 spaces is very important, and we stumble over some interesting properties of M3 brains with respect to the supersymmetry. And so this program is worth pursuing much further. And it's also connected to aspects of work of a number of people here, but in particular also that of Wuthan and Atira. So those are clearly fruitful directions to work on. Thank you. Sorry,
Just a couple of questions about pseudo-supersymmetry. First, just to make sure that I understand something. Do you find the same number of pseudo-supercharges as we had with just the G2 04 pseudo-supercharges?
Yeah.
Did you go back and check, for example, in Clemenos-Rassler? You can view that as start with the conifolds, which would preserve 8 superchargers in type 2, turn on these fluxes in Clemenos-Rassler, and you're left with 4. Did you check whether there might be 4 pseudo superchargers in some sense?
No. First of all, those were not our solutions, so we were not able to do that. But let me tell you something related.
The one you did with the 8-dimensional space.
Yes. Let me turn to the 6-dimensional example. You know, Clevenos-Trasler example is example when you have the gradient D3 brain plus fluxes that provide fractional brains. Okay? It's somewhat different. Here we start with nothing. You know, we just start with G2 holonomy, and all we do, we turn on this fourth one, you know, so it's not that way.
So in that case, when you had no fluxes at all, you had a certain amount of supersymmetry, and when you turned on fluxes, you broke a half. And in this case, you were already at minimal supersymmetry when you turned on the fluxes, so presumably that's why you were left with nothing. So I'm just wondering whether the pseudo-supersymmetry means something in general, whether it might be a property that always exists in these solutions with fluxes.
I think it is specific, but let me point you another example that is intriguing to us, that when we looked at the resolved conifold of Pandozaras and Sadlin example, we couldn't prove supersymmetry in type 2B. Those solutions broke supersymmetry. They were singular too, but nevertheless, the way they derived the solutions from first order equations of motion. So, at the time, since those were not solutions we constructed, we just saw no supersymmetry and went ahead. But now, in this new context, you know, these new things that we stumbled over between M-theory and G2, it's worth revisiting. What is, does Pandozaras-Sadlin solution satisfy the pseudo-supersymmetry transformation? And also interesting might be to move that to M-theory. Or a dualized version, of course, you have to get back to M-theory. But so all those things, I think, are in principle quite interesting and should be explored. Again, you know, those are only classical things. They can break at high derivative order, which we have very little control over, but also, of course, with fancy technique of quantum M-theory. Well. But, bits and pieces that I heard about, you know, discussing things with them. his work. So that is not clear what happens at the quantum level anyway. So it may be just a curiosity, or it may be something really interesting. You know, that's, it's worth pursuing further. Okay.